Okay, thank you. We're going to call the tax committee meeting to order. Sorry, there's a little delay because we were trying to figure out the handouts here. And we do have a quorum, so if someone could move the minutes of February 3rd. Is there a motion for the minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Wynn moved the minutes of February 4th, I guess. February 3rd. Thank you. Discussing the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. And so today, members, we are going to hear the governor's budget in presentation in the tax area only. I know other committees are hearing their parts, and I know Representative Carlson and Representative Solder kind of heard the budget proposal from the governor holistically, but we're just focused on our part today. So we've got Mr. Innes with us, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Innes. We have a number of handouts, some that our staff put together and some that the commissioner brought with him. So we'll just let the commissioner tell us, you know, what he'd like to tell us and what he'd like to look at. I have these two items. I don't know if that's what you want to start with. Or
yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ward Innes with the Department of Revenue. Yeah, I think it's easier to walk through the few pages that were part of the governor's budget. I think that's probably the easiest way to go. I will say, Madam Chair, that by tomorrow, if not no later than Friday, you'll actually have language in front of you. We wanted to get the language drafted by today, but the revisor, as you all know, is pretty swamped, and we weren't quite able to make the deadline. But we will have language for you, Madam Chair, certainly by the end of the week. You can see the actual language. So I think the best place to start is just to walk through the aid and credit change pages. The first part, as you all know, is this preliminary narrative about the overall budget. There's a cost sheet on page 5 that shows the cost of the individual items. For your reference, I think it's duplicated by what the committee handed out. I think that's helpful. And I'll just walk through, and you guys can ask questions at any time you think is appropriate, and I'll do my best to answer. The first change item is one that's gotten a lot of notoriety already, and that's the reduction in the corporate franchise tax. It's going to be reduced over 6 years, starting in tax year 2010. And it's, you can see the schedule there on the change page. 1% starting in tax year 10, another percent in tax year 11, and then the two following years, 0.5% each year. So it ultimately rests at 4.8%, which is a little more than a 50% reduction in the corporate franchise tax. We think that's one of the cornerstones of the governor's budget recommendations. And if you have any questions about why we went down this road, why we decided to address the corporate franchise tax, I'd be more than happy to try to address those questions. That's the first change item in the governor's budget.
Commissioner, excuse me.
Get this one in here.
Yes. Yes, I think we do. This is, kind of, I think, the isn't this sort of the banner piece? So, on the corporate franchise tax.
A question I have, we've been looking at various tax credits and other benefits. When the governor gave the state, he made the comment that we had a relatively high ranking when we combined federal and state corporate tax. But what came to my mind during the speech was that doesn't really show the net overall, because we have all of these various credits that are put against us. And I don't know if you've ever calculated what the net is, and obviously some businesses benefit, but others do not. But if you were to take the big picture and look at, here's our ranking, but we also have all of these other various credits, what that net is and how we would compare.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, it's a good question. And, the governor was, when he referenced in the state, as you know, was a statutory tax rate. Now, we have the third highest statutory tax rate, corporate tax rate in the country. And when you combine it with our federal rate, it's the fourth highest, and I think what he said in the industrial world or something, developed nations. And you're right, that only tells part of the story, the statutory rate. It's difficult because every corporate tax base is so different and so, varying. We have done research and looked out at the different state tax, corporate tax systems to see how our R&D credit rates relative to others. Some are combined reporting states, some are not. We're a combined reporting state, so that enhances the reach of our corporate income tax. Some have different apportionment formulas. Some have throwback and throw-out rules. And so if you look at that and kind of just go side by side and look at where the credits are and deductions, I would say, as a general rule, like R&D credit is 2.5%, 2% above a certain amount, and a lot of states have a 20% R&D credit, not the outer limit, and many of them are more robust and generous than ours. Many states aren't combined reporting, which provides an opportunity for tax avoidance if you're a corporation. So I don't have like a list of where we would exactly rank if we calculate every jurisdiction's effective tax rate. And also, of course, as you know, Representative, sector by sector, there's great differentials. Because a Medtronic and a 3M are greatly helped by the R&D credit. Other industries are C Corp. Just don't do a lot of in-house R&D. So there's wide variation. I think what we did do, though, I think a lot of people talked about the statutory rate comment, and it is a, you know, kind of an attention-grabbing statistic that gets your attention. But that wasn't the due diligence we did to determine whether we thought it was necessary to adjust the corporate income tax. We really looked at the whole body of literature that's out there, the research that's been done by economists, public finance experts, and others, and really the story that told, when you look at the body of literature in its entirety, is that the corporate franchise tax is a fatally flawed tax. And the number one reason for that fatal flaw is that it is a tax on capital. And nearly all the research that we looked at, everybody from Larry Summers to, you know, Congressional Budget Office, to articles that have been published in national tax journals, really drew the conclusion that it's a tax on capital in a global economy where we have open markets and global economies, capital is becoming more and more mobile. And as a result of that mobility, it's becoming more and more sensitive to tax differentials. And so if you really want to enhance economic development in your state, the corporate tax is probably one of the most destructive taxes. In fact, I pulled out a couple findings in some of these reports that we based our decision on. And one from, where is it here? Yeah, here's one from a paper that was released by the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, the international organization. It says that economics points to corporate income taxes as the most harmful to growth. Another one that was published in the Public Finance Review indicated that economic research indicates that each 1% increase in the corporate tax rate reduces foreign direct investment by 1%. So a direct correlation between your tax burden and the amount of foreign investment, which is really what you want to attract. So we really went through the literature and looked at what can we do in the context of a budget situation where we have limited revenues and resources. How can we materially move the meter to position Minnesota to be better equipped to enhance job creation in Minnesota, capital formation? And we kept coming back to, we looked at sales tax, we looked at individual income taxes, we kept coming back to the corporate franchise tax. Just based on the body of work and the research that's out there, we are an outlier in that respect. Our rate is high, and I expect our effective tax rate is high. And the evidence, I mean, Larry Summers, anyone that wants to, he recently published a paper just this last January that's spot on about the deficiencies in the corporate income tax and how mobile capitalism invades globalized world. And it's really spot on. I highly recommend. He writes in a way, like a guy, like a person like me, who's not an economist by any means, can understand the implications of having a tax on capital. And, Art Rolnick has spoken about the deficiencies in the corporate franchise tax. I mean, I don't think there's consensus among economists for anything, but I think there's near consensus that the corporate franchise tax is a seriously flawed tax on a whole litany of measurements. And I think, you know, beyond the economic development arguments that can be made for addressing the corporate franchise tax, it's also a highly regressive tax. If you look at the Suits Index in our tax incident study, it is more regressive than the property tax. And when you look at, if you drill down a little further on the property tax and look at homestead property taxes, you hear a lot about the regressivity of homestead property taxes. When you factor in the PTR, the corporate income tax is more regressive than the homeowner property taxes. And then you go to the other arguments I know the chair is very familiar with, that it's a highly volatile tax. If you look at the volatility of the corporate franchise tax compared to some others, Department of Finance has done substantial research in this area. The corporate franchise tax base is almost 4 times greater in volatility than individual income tax, and nearly 6 times greater volatility than the general sales tax. So as you know, Representative Carlson, you've seen the volatility in that tax in your committee, and it has contributed to the flux and the the wide variation in our revenue stream. So it's a very volatile tax that you can't rely on over the long haul. There's just a number of deficiencies in the tax, but the compelling reason for the governor and why he wanted to do something soon on this is that it is an impediment to capital formation and ultimately economic development in Minnesota.
That's right. I think Commissioner Schultz prepares that question. I think it's going if you could provide, at least for me, I'd be interested in how that nets out, taking a look at what, and I know I recognize the volatility and that different dollar amount coming in from one biennium to the next, but maybe select like the last biennium and take a look at what we raised with the corporate tax, the cumulative total of the various credits that went to business, so how that nets out. But the reason that I asked the question initially was I referenced the governor's speech where he talked about our international ranking combined with federal and state. Like I said earlier, what hit me was, well, that's part of the question for picture, but there are all of these credits we also give to various businesses. And, you know, on the one hand, you probably have a certain number of businesses that are paying the full rate, and you have others that are benefiting from those various credits that offset much of what they're arguably would be taking in on the corporate tax from those same companies. And so that's the difficulty when we start talking about rankings. In fact, I've never been a big fan of rankings, even though I use them sometimes myself. Like education, you know, we use with our colleges and universities, various rankings. Even when you look behind the numbers, you find that those rankings were really distorted one way or another. So I do pick up when we start referencing rankings, but maybe more controlled sometimes, controlled and controlled and what's on the page of it. But I'll stop there, but you did have a good answer, a compliment to the people well-prepared.
Madam Chair, to that point, Representative Carlson, your point is very well taken, but I think the economic argument would be made, even if we determine we were middle of the pack as far as effective taxes, I think there's still a compelling economic argument to continue to adjust the corporate franchise. And I think we've also looked at, we not only looked at the literature and determined, you know, this is probably the most bang for the buck as far as providing capital to flow into Minnesota, but we also looked at what other states and other jurisdictions are doing. We don't do public policy in a vacuum. And there clearly seems to be a trend around the country to aggressively address the corporate franchise tax. I mean, the governor of New Jersey, a Democrat, just signed a bill to repealing their throwback, throwout rule, which limits the reach of the corporate franchise tax. West Virginia is currently reducing its rate from 9% to 6.5%. Massachusetts, another state, is going to combine reporting like we are, but also at the same time reducing their rate. Ohio is phasing out the corporate franchise tax and replacing with another sort of business tax. So you look at what's going on out there, and we've seen the activity on the apportionment formula, and we've seen some other things, but there's generally a trend out there on the corporate franchise tax. I think everybody's recognizing we are in a very hyper-competitive global economy, and you can't afford to have a tax on capital. You can't put yourself in the best position. I mean, it was a tax that was put in effect in 1933 when capital was much less mobile, or not mobile at all in some respects, and it has just outlived its usefulness. It is no longer a tax that we can afford to have at the rate we have it now. And with all those deficiencies the tax has, it only raises 7% of our general fund revenue. So we create all these issues about compliance. Taxpayer compliance is expensive, administrative burden of auditing. These are very complex audits. A disproportionate amount of our litigation is involved in the corporate franchise areas, the time-consuming court cases that we have to pursue. And at the end of the day, after all these distortions, economic distortions that are created by the tax, all the ancillary downside of having the tax in effect, we collect 7% of our revenue. So I guess I would just say the squeeze isn't worth the juice, and we need to do something to address
it. I just want to make it clear. This morning, I didn't want to debate the corporate tax. I just was providing from you more information so that as the discussion moves forward, we have all the information on the table relative to tax break for businesses, and also what we're collecting on the corporate tax, and that's what that's for my flights.
Sure.
You can provide that.
Absolutely.
And Mr. Commissioner, Representative Carlson did not want to debate the corporate tax, but the committee does, and we have seven people on the list. So, and yes, he really did. So we do have seven people on the list, and I do think, Commissioner, we should slow this down and really talk about this. I mean, this is the right place and time, and we'll continue to talk about it because it's a really big piece of the governor's tax area. But, you know, this is the committee that has to get its head around it and decide if there's some movement there that should take place, if it should just be disregarded. And this, as you know, this discussion will continue to the end of the session. But I, you know, before we go to all these people, I just want to meet, you know, maybe for context for me, you know, it is it's a very expensive ticket item, and you have $230 million by 2013. The revenue department has it at $380 million by 2015. So it's, you know, a big piece for us to all think about. And you know, Commissioner, that I authored cutting the corporate tax myself last year in this committee, and you and I mostly agree on this. I think this is something that people should just think about for a little bit. It's really not a partisan issue. It is a very flawed tax for many of the reasons you just enumerated. I agree with you. And in fact, in a perfect world, we could just eliminate it outright and do something different. I guess my issue, just big picture, stepping back from that, knowing that, you know, it's great when you can get rid of a regressive tax that a lot of people don't pay, and it's hard to collect, and it's volatile, and kind of all these things that economists would agree upon. Yet the timing issue is very difficult. You know, we have a deficit, and so any attempt to cut any tax really throws the deficit. Or you cut somebody deeper, you know, you provide more pain in another part of the state budget. And I think we just all need to be honest about that those are the choices. We certainly have, you know, the end of the political spectrum that would say all tax cuts are good all the time and government should get as absolutely as small as possible. And then the other side that would say there's never a good time for a tax cut. We should spend. But I think you and I know that the decision will be made somewhere in the middle, whether it's this major tax from Minnesota or any other major tax. And so it's helpful for members, you know, bipartisan, to chip in and think this through a little bit. And I guess one of the things I thought, honestly, I was a little surprised by the proposal from the governor, because, you know, I hadn't heard any positive response when I tried to cut it last year, and of course we had a much better economy last year. So then this year, when the economy is really in the tank, and I know the rhetoric people will often say is, you know, it's a spending problem, this forecast is a revenue problem, mostly not caused by Minnesota legislators or the governor. It is a national collapse of the economy, and revenues have fallen off, you know, the deep end. So the timing seems difficult for me, and I would like some insight as to, you know, is this the job creator move? And if it is, I guess one of the things I had thought about, did the governor or did you advise him to think through that, you know, a better way maybe in my mind to help all Minnesota businesses, not just the small piece that pay the corporate tax, because you know that more businesses don't pay the corporate tax than you because they're S-Corps or something else. And then a whole bunch of them are non-Minnesota companies. So actually it's kind of a sliver of corporate Minnesota that would be involved in this discussion. Why not cut the sales tax? I mean, I was thinking about this. The sales tax affects every business in Minnesota. It's also very regressive. Most of the sales tax, we're not most, 40% of it is paid by Minnesota businesses. And pyramiding, as we know, is a really bad idea for businesses. A cut in the state sales tax, even at the same amount, I think would help all businesses more and would also remove a regressive tax. And, you know, did you think about, I mean, it, you know, it's just, maybe I don't have the data right, but it appears to me, Mr. Michael or someone else can comment on this, Minnesota businesses pay more in sales tax than they do in the corporate tax. So it seems to me a fairer brush to kind of look at the sales tax. And if you could just comment on that and timing.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. I think my memory is accurate. This would pay about 40% of the general sales tax. So you're correct. They pay a larger amount, aggregate amount, in that tax than they do corporate franchise tax. You know, we looked at all the options out there, and the governor's directive to me was, Ward, how can we materially move the meter for job creation in the context of very tight budget constraints? I mean, that was kind of the the nut I was given to try to address. And I think we just kept going back to what we've been, you know, just the research, the economic research about where the best bang for the dollar was going to be. And, you know, I think one misconception about a cut in the corporate franchise tax rate is that a lot of out-of-state businesses will benefit from that. If you look at our tax incidence study and the current incidence of the corporate franchise tax, about 40% is exported, a little more than 40%. But there's a different incidence when you do a tax cut. And Dr. Wilson has put together some information on what that incidence would be. And at the end of the day, a tax cut on the corporate franchise tax primarily benefits consumers and lower prices, Minnesota consumers, and Minnesota workers and higher wages. And only 9% of the benefit accrues to out-of-state investors. And so I think the incidence, I think there's a misconception out there that the incidence is the same as what you'd find in the current corporate franchise tax, but the incidence on a cut is different. So the primary beneficiaries, when everything's sorted out, is Minnesota workers, higher wages, and Minnesota consumers and lower prices. And so we thought that was compelling. The fact that the final long-term incidence, as Dr. Wilson calls it, falls most prominently on Minnesota consumers and workers. So I thought that was compelling. You know, it was also, there was this risk factor as well. You know, doing a 0.5% on the sales tax or exempting some business input, which I think you think would be very good tax policy, and I concur with that. We just didn't have a good feel for how much that would incent additional investment or additional job creation. We had a better feel based on the literature that's out there about the impact a corporate franchise tax reduction would be. And it also, I'll tell you this, it also has a certain curb appeal. There's a certain curb appeal as well that you have when you can say you're reducing a tax by 50%, a tax on capital by 50%. That gets noticed, not only in Minnesota, but around the country. And I think it's kind of a strong message. Definitely have some curb appeal to say, you know what, we're going to knock this tax that I think most economists agree is a detriment to economic development. We're going to knock it in half over 6 years. And so part of it was exactly that. We wanted to send a statement to businesses, large and small, that we are going to change the climate in Minnesota. And I don't know if you send that same message by, you know, exempting a certain number of inputs, business inputs. But we did. We talked about those things. We talked about, you know, exempting some income from pass-through entities. We talked, when we looked at the whole waterfront of possibilities to try to prime the economic pump, at the end of the day, we thought this was the most compelling place to go.
Just, Commissioner, just put on the timing part, could you just, you know, the concept of sort of making the deficit bigger at a time when we're really needing revenue. And I'm trying to really set aside the rhetoric, because we do hear people say this is a spending problem. I'm talking at a different level. This is a different level. This forecast is a revenue problem. So why take revenue chunks out at a time when the spigot of money, the stream, is dramatically reduced?
Madam Chair, that's a great question. You know, the governor's philosophy on this, along these lines, is that if all we do is satisfy our constitutional obligation to balance the budget and then do a little short-term triage on the economic development side, we've missed an opportunity. And he really wanted to want something that is not long-term, a long-term structural change. So he really was the point that we are struggling here in Minnesota. We've been struggling not since the beginning of the recession, but prior to that. And I think he just knows that we need to move the meter. And he thinks he's flat out said, he goes, if all we do is balance the budget, meet our constitutional obligation, and then we do a little bit of triage on economic development, we will miss an opportunity to really make a difference. And he thought this was as high a priority as, you know, addressing the budget deficit in equal, you know, to try to change the climate here in Minnesota. So that was kind of the thought process, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative West.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner Ines. You say that now, as it stands now, 7% of our general fund revenues. Do you know, between 1933 when it came in and now, when it was at its highest and what that number was?
Madam Chair, Representative West, I think I do. Dr. Wilson gave me tax collections, corporate tax collections, Representative, since fiscal year 2000. So I think I would expect that the high water mark looks like it was almost $1.2 billion in fiscal year 2007, Representative. And now we're scheduled to collect, you know, something in the neighborhood of, for this biennium, for 10 and 11, 1.4 for the biennial, $700 million a year.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, Commissioner Ines, my question wasn't that the high watermark for revenues collected, but high watermark for a percentage of our general fund revenue.
Oh. Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I don't have that, but I can get that for you.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'd appreciate getting that. Are you familiar with the GAO report from last June that essentially said corporations weren't really paying their taxes anyway?
I am familiar with that, Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, my point was, and Madam Chair, if I may just a comment, this is a member's note. This is a shell game. You can move the money anywhere you want, and if, you know, your taxing corporations are going to move it into personal income or wherever, and we can say now that the corporate franchise tax is regressive. I will tell you this, it's my pledge here today, if you can get corporations to come here and say, yeah, we're going to lower our prices because we got the corporate franchise tax, I'll start voting with the Republican caucus. I'm already on the side of the table anyway. But it's just not going to happen. The prices are not going to go down. It is a shell game, and I think that my problem with, you know, lowering corporate franchise tax is just another shelter for the shell game for corporations. So I think the true question of raising revenue in the state is to raise it fairly, and I don't necessarily think that this is going to yield a positive result for us. So thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Commissioner, maybe first a comment. I'm not sure that everyone around the table, myself included, would agree that this is strictly a revenue problem. I think some of our perspective is that we've indexed the overall cost of government in Minnesota kind of largely to personal income, and now that we have a year when personal income has dropped substantially, we're not quite willing to live with that index and correspondingly reduce the cost of government. So I think we've kind of built ourselves into a fixed cost situation here where reduced revenue is exposed, from my perspective, a cost to government that frankly is just too high, and we might be better off looking at it on a per capita cost to government basis going forward as compared to personal income. But so with that comment aside and recognizing that there's, you know, some debate there, I do have a question, Mr. Commissioner. Do you have a sense that this actually fosters the attraction of capital to early stage kind of innovative startup? Those entities typically don't show any profit to be taxed, have any income to be taxed initially. So what's the impact on this recommendation relative to really attracting early stage capital and kind of fostering an innovative economy?
Commissioner, Madam Representative Downey, you know, this isn't the magic bullet for all types of spots or all types of investment, and that's why the package the government put forward has some other components to it that are intended to incent early stage capital formation. We got the Small Business Investment Act is one. The Angel Investment Credit is part of the governor's budget. And I'm missing one, I think. There's a third one. But, well, Green Job, of course. But there's other components. We realize, you know, there's those gaps in the corporate income tax alone, which, you know, is not going to resolve those issues. That's correct. Most of those aren't organized as C-Corps. And so we've got some other mechanisms, other components that we think would help bridge that deficiency or that shortcoming.
Why not zero? Strictly a timing, and how do we quote unquote pay for it? Or is that not ideal?
Representative, I think there's many folks, economists and otherwise, who would recommend zero as the appropriate rate for the corporate franchise tax. I think what Madam Chair said, we are in the context of an extreme budget challenge, and we wanted to make some significant movements, but full repeal, I think, is a lot to fight off. I think if we can knock it in half, we've really made a change that will make a material difference. So I think that's about the best I can do on that one. Yeah.
President Downey, further?
No, thank you.
Okay. And let's see, we have Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. It sounds like you've done a lot of research on this. The research I'd be interested in, I don't know if it applies, and when our state economists and national economists are sort of saying we're in uncharted waters and the normal formulas don't work, I don't know how much guidance we can take from things, but I'd love to see some research from states that have in the past lowered their corporate franchise tax in comparison to similar states who didn't. And what result that had in terms of business investment and job creation, because it seems to me as corporations are deciding where to locate, if you just go by the highly publicized competition, mm-hmm. it's all about who will give them a free building and who will give them a free land. And, you know, I mean, the South is just kind of set new records on giveaways in terms of securing corporate investment. And so I'm just not sure that in this economy in which we have a lot of businesses that are just struggling to stay afloat, they're not worried about the taxes on profits, and who are trying to retain jobs and employees are worried about losing their jobs, if this is going to have the kind of impact that we need. And so if you or your staff could look at that and try and find some comparable states and some comparable experiences, that might be helpful in terms of evaluating this.
Madam Chair, it's been a while, sir. We will do some due diligence on it and see what we can come up with for you. And I want to emphasize, this is not a short-term solution. That we're, you know, we knock down this rate, or we pass a law that's going to knock down the rate over 6 years. All of a sudden, we're going to have investments flowing into the state instantaneously. This is a long-term, taking a long-term step in order to really change the dynamic, the economic dynamic in Minnesota. So this is not a triage move. This is like, we want to send a message, though, that we are going to change our tax climate in Minnesota. And don't forget about us up here. I'm not making the argument either that the taxes are the end-all and be-all. You know, when I was over at the Department of Employment and Economic Development, I sit down with a lot of business leaders, and they're deciding where to locate investment or locate a headquarters or a manufacturing facility. And first and foremost, without fail, I'll be the first to admit it, they asked about skilled labor force. Do we have access to a robust, deep labor pool that can meet our needs? That was always number one. But number two or three was usually about tax climate. And they didn't ask me about the sales tax. It wasn't like, what's your rate and what's the sales tax base? What they asked about was taxes on income and taxes on capital was the primary thing. I never once got a question about sales tax base, sales tax rate. But I think your question's a good one, and that some comparisons would be in order.
Yeah, and thanks, Commissioner, for that. But I do think it is kind of an issue of timing, and I think the public will judge us in this unique time on how we respond to the unique challenges that we're facing in every component of our budget. We have long-term goals and things that we need to fix and things that aren't making sense if you look at it logically in the long term. And I really think we have to talk about, is this the time, which long-term dreams and plans should get implemented in this unique time and which ones shouldn't? And I have to say, it's hard to hear, it's just 7% of our general fund, when I think absolutely everyone in this room would sigh a huge sigh of relief if from the new revised forecast we actually found an extra 3%, let alone 7%.
And Madam Chair, your point's okay. I didn't want to diminish the 7% general fund revenue. That's real money. There's no question about it. But I did want to put in some context that the deficiencies that are inherent in the tax, are they worth, and are they more of a detriment than the revenue that ultimately generated? I think it's a good question to ask and one we need to talk about.
Okay, now, and Commissioner, and we have, to be fair, we have Representative Broad to this point, but I want to first go to Representative Loon and just say that as a new member of taxes, and this applies to Representative Reinhardt as well and others who are freshmen, I did not mean to pass over you if you were trying to speak to that point. I put you on the list. But if you're on that point, we want to hear from you. Some members sort of cheat with that, and they kind of go to that point, and it's really, they just don't want to wait for the right people ahead of them. So if I did that to you, please ask the question now. I didn't mean to kind of go over you if you were on the same issue. So Representative Loon.
I thank you, Madam Chair, and I think actually it is along the same line, so I appreciate your latitude there. But Commissioner, I'm just interested, and I think it does follow up a little bit on Representative Loeffler's question. You know, we've got a lot of high-profile stories of longtime Minnesota businesses and that moving outstate or locating expansions of their businesses outstate. And has the governor or your office had an opportunity to really conduct, I guess, exit interviews, for lack of a better term, with those businesses? And putting together your budget proposals and that, how has that figured into your decision to take this move?
Madam Chair, Representative, welcome to the Tax Committee. This is where all the action takes place, you know. Yeah, okay. You know, We have, you know, when I was at Deed, we did do exit interviews, and oftentimes we would be able to secure a business to come to Minnesota, and we would call them up and say, what were the determining factors? Why did you make another choice? And oftentimes it was things that we just couldn't compete. They wanted to be close to a particular customer or a particular vendor that was really important to them. And sometimes it was about recruitment. They had a hard time recruiting to Minnesota. But oftentimes it was tax climate. Workers' comp would come up relatively frequently. Cold weather. They wanted a coastal climate. So some of those things we didn't know, obviously had no bearing on. But we did. We've done. And I would say the most common reason was cost of doing business. And it would range everywhere from, you know, tax burdens, property tax burdens, individual income tax burdens. So many were also pass-through entities, so they were taxed at the individual level. I would say the most common one was cost of doing business, which would include also regulatory costs, other things. We tried to drill down as well as we could, try to get at the crux of the issue, why we lost this particular employer. And it ranged the whole waterfront, but the most common one was cost of doing business. There's cheaper places to do business. They liked our labor force. They liked the work ethic of our labor force. They liked our school system. They like, but at the end of the day, they're in the business to make a profit. And return on investment matters, and prices matter, and that's what more often than not the number one reason.
Representative Loon. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it actually was just following up on Representative Loeffler's request for information. I think that's good information for us to have, but I don't think you should stop at the borders of the United States, because commerce doesn't. And so it seems to me that when we're looking at comparative studies of where we fit, we've got to look at it in a worldwide basis. And so I think if you're providing the committee information, it would be interesting to find out where we fit in terms of being competitive in a worldwide economy. We are in uncharted waters, but it's not just because of what's going on here. You have China with an economy that is on the move in a way that it never was before. India, I mean, you can go down the list. And so if we stop at our borders, we've missed the point. And so I just would appreciate that information as well.
Mr. McGinn, you know, I think we're going to have this debate a long, long time this year. Who would you trust? Who would you personally trust? Or what organization would you trust to provide a true literature review and a true compilation of information as it relates to sort of the age-old kind of anecdotal debate on, you know, do tax cuts help people stay and create jobs, or do, you know, everybody asserts this in both parties here.
Mm-hmm.
And who would you, as the Commissioner of Revenue, how would you propose, because I thought about this, and actually I thought about requesting that Mr. Michael or someone else kind of go back and do kind of a broad literature review for this whole argument of what really attracts it. When does a company leave? What makes them stay? As it relates to revenue. I mean, you know, everybody throws out the organizations and then they pick a really conservative one or a really liberal one. Do you have a thought on how you'd kind of get to the truth if we were all kind of taking our partisan hats off and just trying to find the facts? What would you advise?
Madam Chair, I would be reticent about anointing any one person as the arbiter of what literature we're gonna
yeah.
rely on and focus on. It might make more sense to compose even a small panel of experts that would include Joel Michael, obviously, and Art Rolnick. I'm sure we could find some other individuals who, you know, would be willing to maybe dedicate a little time to that. But I'd be more happy to come up with a few names, and we could share lists. And I'm pretty confident that the literature is going to say what I represented it says. Like I said, there's never a consensus among economists. But I think if we had a panel we all felt comfortable with to do a review of the literature, I think that would definitely be of value.
Thank you. Representative Colbert.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Commissioner, I think when I walked in, you were talking about other states that have done away with this or reduced it. And I thought you said Ohio was one that has reduced it and replaced it with other business taxes. Mm-hmm. I think were your words. Can you elaborate on the replacement?
Yeah, they went to what they call a cat.
Mr. We can't hear you too.
Oh, Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, there has been some experimentation at the state level with replacement taxes, business taxes. And Ohio was one of the more recent experiment, and it's a CAT. It's called a commercial activities tax, I believe. And it's a variation of a gross receipts tax.
Mm-hmm.
And we did look at variations of replacement tax that may be more beneficial. There's been research done on the bat. A number of years ago, there was research done on the bat. And what we concluded, and I think the verdict's still out in Ohio, because they're still in the transition phase now. And then Texas also went to a gross margins tax on businesses. There's a few experiments out there right now. Michigan just recently repealed their single business tax. So it's kind of been a mixed bag. My experience with the business folks over the year and people who make investment decisions is that one of the things they value about a tax system is a certain level of certainty. You know, there's a statement that an old tax is a good tax. And so we were reluctant, especially in this environment of uncertainty, economic uncertainty, to infuse a whole new tax regime into the mix and say, we're going to completely kill the corporate franchise tax and replace it with the gross receipts tax. And the impact that has, industry by industry, are highly variant. And so we were a little, I think, reticent to going down that road and doing something that was just totally overturning the tax regime. I've learned, being around as a tax committee for a number of years, that I think usually the best work comes in increments. And that big, huge overhaul, especially in the business tax area, are very risky endeavors. And they're finding that out in Texas. In Texas, they went to this gross margin tax. Now they found out the revenue estimate was a couple billion dollars too low. And they're finding out that taxpayers, businesses, are responding to incentives. They're changing they're going from maybe a C-corp to an S-corp or partnership. They're doing a few other things. So they're scrambling around now to find out how we plug the hole and what, you know, is there going to be a migration of businesses that different that we didn't anticipate? And so in this level, with the economy and the level of uncertainty, we didn't think that introducing a whole new form of taxation, business taxation, was probably
Madam Chair, Commissioner, you are picking winners and losers in this as well, with this particular one, and you are shoveling it out into the a big tail as well in the future. The goal is to create jobs, but you're not creating jobs, as you said, right away on it. I don't mind the long term outlook, because I think that we are doing too much short term stuff. But at the same time, I do think that we need to have a stable revenue source, and business has to be a part of that. As you stated very eloquently, one of the first questions they ask is, what kind of a workforce do you have that is well educated? And that doesn't come free, nor should it. And then a follow-up question to the question about the interviewing companies that will relocate. Are you interviewing companies that come back, like Hutchinson, when they close the plant in South Dakota and bring that workforce back here? Why?
Yes, sir. Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, you know, especially during my time at D, we talked to all businesses, ones that were coming back to Minnesota.
We had you there.
Yep.
You were a good
I enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun. And I miss that part of the job, working with entrepreneurs and business employers and everything. But we did. It was very clear to us that every industry sector and every industry had different needs and wants. All that mattered was the skilled workforce. Remember, we attracted Coloplast, a biotech company that's now located in Minneapolis, to move their North America headquarters here. And it sticks out to me because it was a big get for Minnesota. But also, it just shows how every company is uniquely situated. You know, they were most interested, exclusively interested, in our skilled workforce and being in close proximity to the other medical device companies. There's a core medical device company here. It's one of our core competencies. They wanted to be part of that. And so I brought up the issue. Well, I couldn't even flag it, but it's on a laundry list to deal with people about taxes or any other issues. Oh, we're not worried about taxes on that. And we're just not worried about it. We want your labor force. We want to be in close proximity to Medtronic and Guidance and all those guys. And it wasn't relevant to them. But that was the exception to the rule. To this day, I still remember that one because it was such an exception. But we talked to everybody. And every day, the things change. And, you know, an Ecolab may value one thing, and then 6 months later, value something else. And so it's very fluid out there, and we try to stay ahead of the ball and say, what is the needs of the citizen community? But I'd be shocked if 10 years from now, number one, still wasn't skilled labor force. 20 years from now. I mean, at the end of the day, that is a huge component of why we're as successful as we are here. But I think we've gotten to the point where we think skilled labor force, which I think we're the best in the country. Okay. When you couple the...
Mr. Just a little follow-up. It's interesting that Representative Broad brings up the Indian economy. SR Steel is building a steel plant in the Nashwauk area. And in their company in India for steel mining and steel producing, 80% of their workforce has an engineering degree. And that's our competition, is education.
Thank you.
Commissioner. That's what's absolutely right. But I also think we've gotten a little bit complacent in Minnesota in that we think that our skilled labor force trumps all other considerations. And that we have a great labor force, and it doesn't matter if we have high cost of doing business. It doesn't matter if we have an uncompetitive regulatory environment. It doesn't matter because we have a great labor force. And the reality is, India has a great labor force. And we gotta acknowledge that, and we need to do something on the cost side of the equation.
Thank you. Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I asked this question of Commissioner Hansen already during the Ways and Means Committee. Commissioner Hansen laid out the budget and informed us that this proposal was an attempt to get things moving again in Minnesota, getting people back to work and having a positive corporate climate in Minnesota. And my question of him was, what accountability measures do you have when we just cut this tax without any responsibility for actually making the investment, to make certain that we don't have the scandal like we have had with some of the bailouts in companies, including Minnesota companies, according to Fox 9 News this morning and last night. One of Minnesota's leading companies took corporate bailout money and is planning these wild trips to Las Vegas, and they've gone on retreats and spent thousands and thousands of dollars on spa treatments for employees. And I think that it's one thing to have a corporate climate where business can be successful, but I think it's a very different situation when we as taxpayers are either giving bailouts or cuts, and we are having no accountability measures for the reinvestment in our economy.
Madam Chair, Representative Hilstrom, I do view a tax cut as substantially different than a bailout or using taxpayers' money in order to, you know, to the banks. What you're basically saying is that we're going to lower the cost of doing business. We're going to let you keep more of your own money, the corporation, and hopefully you're going to invest that in the corporation, invest that in the workforce, invest that in, you know, manufacturing facilities. So I think it is materially different than saying, here's taxpayer money that's not the corporation's money, and we're giving it to you to do X, Y, and Z. And I think in that context, it makes sense to have performance measurements and requirements and strings attached to it. I think in the context of a general tax reduction, I don't think that is as relevant or is relevant. I think, you know, we want to tell these corporations, we want you to do business in Minnesota, we're going to lower your cost of doing business for doing that. If you believe in markets, if you believe in the marketplace to a great extent, they will respond to that pricing mechanism and they'll make those investments. And we'll all benefit.
Thank you, Madam. I am not so certain that I am confident that in this economy we can just count on the market to do what's right. Because if we did, we wouldn't be seeing these proposals for more and more corporate bailouts, additional business communities. And so I am just not so confident at this given time that to say we're just going to cut your taxes and hope you do the right thing is, you know.
Okay. Let's see. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to refer back to some comments you made, Madam Chair, and I agree as far as looking at rationale for the types of tax cuts. And this kind of does get back also to Representative Loeffler's comments and, of course, Representative Broad following up. One of the things that I noticed about the proposal from the government, that as the governor, that I think makes lots of sense, is that there is no one answer. You know, I think lowering the corporate tax rate, it's being done over time, that is not something that's going to be a one-year solution or even two-year. It's over time. And hopefully we can be stable with that. I believe that it depends on the type of business that you're trying to help here. There are different sizes of business. there are different ages of business, and I maintain that depending on the size of the business, if you have a large corporation that's looking at doing expansions in other areas, over a period of a year or two or three, they're making choices and decisions about new plants, about new satellite operations, and I would submit that workforce is a big deal. We know that. Commissioner, you made the point about, and so to represent Solberg, that other places are now getting better workforces too, and I think we have to recognize that as we continue to work in education, obviously. But my point is that they're looking at lots of things over a period of time to make those choices. You know, we're not going to pass a tax break today and see new plants set up next week or next month or even this year. I think this is the type of thing that people look at and say, hey, we're going to do something in the next 3 or 4 years over time. This is tax climate is a big deal in addition to these other things. And I think it's one arrow in our quiver, so to speak. Now, a brand new startup business or a small business, such as I'm more familiar with, because that's where I come from, quite frankly, a corporate tax rate is probably not a big deal to me. I'm more concerned with capital, I'm more concerned with regulation, and the things that I have to put up with as a small business owner without staff to deal with these issues. And then we have other businesses that are mature, probably not growing, mature, and they are profitable, and they're trying to decide what to do with their capital, and where should they reinvest, and I think they're again tax climate. So I think my point is that I don't think there is any one thing. I think it depends on what sector of business that you're looking at, what sector of the employer market that you're trying to cater to and trying to incent. And I think that's an ongoing issue, but I appreciate the approach that the governor has taken here and the department to say we need to look at all different aspects. There are things here targeted to smaller businesses. There are things targeted here, I think, to new startups. There are things targeted to larger corporations that are looking at keeping jobs. So my point is, I don't think there is a one thing. And we can have a commission set up, and I guess I'd be curious as to how much we'd pay those folks, because I'd like to be part, maybe, I don't know. Because a lot of this, if you think it through, we have a lot of, and if you analyze it, we have a lot of expertise here, too, that come from different sectors that can say, this is important to the experience that I've had in business, and the next person next to me would say, well, yeah, that's important, but this was important to ours, because of the character, because of the nature of it. So that's my point, Madam Chair, and it kind of ties in. I could say it to that point, but probably to the point of a lot of things that have been said, and it's just, I'm trying to bring arms around this whole thing here, but I think we're on the right track here, because this is important stuff, and when we're seeing businesses that are making decisions about being in Minnesota or not being in Minnesota, and, our climate is not a big positive thing. Climate, when I talk about climate, I'm talking about weather, and I'm talking about tax climate, and I'm talking about regulation climate, and that's what it's about, because it's about jobs at the end of the day, private sector jobs that generate the revenues for us to operate and do what we have to do as government.
Thank you, Representative Demmer. And we are going to get to those other pieces that Representative Demmer just talked about, but we have more questions. Representative Mullery.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Innes, I was just, maybe just a comment. It seems strange that you're taking this approach when Mark Feldstein, who was Reagan's chief economic advisor and kind of the hero economist for a lot of conservatives in this country, has said recently that this type of approach is exactly the opposite of what they should be doing. If you are going to give business credits, it should be directed solely at investment credits and things like that, so that you tie it into specific investments by businesses. He specifically said this type of a credit, and others that have been proposed by Democrats also in Congress are not the way to go on the business taxes. So I just kind of wanted to make that comment.
Senator? And Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, I'm not familiar with that that particular position he has taken, but it sounds like he's in favor of targeted tax credits, which I know is his gotten a lot of flack in this committee over the years. But I think if you look at the general body of evidence out, and I'm citing people like Larry Summers, Clinton's top economic advisor, and now the current president's top economic advisor, in fact, Charles McCurr, more conservative economist who worked closely with Reagan. And they all point to the decisions of the corporate franchise tax, and most of them do not, as a general rule, economists do not like targeted tax breaks and incentives. They want broad bases and low rates. And so I would expect that he was in the minority among the economic economic thinkers on this, but I'll refresh my memory on and see what he's saying. But the general rule, I think the weight of the evidence is that aid and credit deductions and the like are not ideal. And we actually looked at going down more of the, I call what the chair did last year, about addressing some of those issues. The problem is that you have some employers here in Minnesota who have made long-term investment commitments based on the current landscape of the tax system. So they've made investments based on the R&D credit. They've made investments based on FOC. They've made investments based on dividend received deduction, all that stuff. And so I think it's hard to pull the rug out from under them when they've made long-term investments in Minnesota based on that landscape. And so we thought it best at this point just to knock down the rate to the best of our ability and make the difference there on the rate structure.
Thank you. No, Representative Pilstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You just commented broad bases and low rates. Did you apply that to any other part of your budget in looking at this? For example, you know, the sales tax, any other taxes that you're looking at, more of the broad base and lower rates?
Madam Chair, Representative, we always look at that. I mean, we looked at, we've had discussions about sales tax, based on it. We've had discussions about that. I think it gets difficult. You have some that I just are pretty intelligible in Minnesota, I think, for the political considerations. I mean, groceries and clothing, I think, are two that most people would agree is a very hard political lift. Even if you think from a purely policy perspective it's the right thing to do, you weigh into the services side of the equation, and that becomes very dicey. You know, there's forcing issues. Very few states have broadly applied a sales tax to services. And so that's, for the most part, uncharted territory. So if we do some due diligence on that, look at that and see if there was a possibility along those lines, we did. And I also know that the 21st Century Tax Reform Commission did a lot of research on sales tax and what you could do with broadening and what would make sense as a replacement tax, maybe knocking down some of the business taxes. I think most economists agree that business taxes, as a general rule, are a bad thing, and that you should try to do as much on the consumer. Consumer taxes are what you really should do because they're more transparent, you know. And so we did look at that, but for a variety of reasons, it didn't seem like an option at this time.
Hilton, okay. And Representative Demmer, we would not pay anybody anything to go take a look at this. The commissioners mentioned the 21st, whether they call it the 21st century tax reform, and they are going to be here soon, and they are going to tell us what they worked on and give us their business tax proposals. And I just want to distinguish what I think Commissioner and I were referencing is not an attempt to get businesses together to say what should we do, but actually for someone to actually review the analytical literature that's out there, that, you know, the empirical stuff, that if there's anything to find and to review the data. So that'd be separate, and anybody would want to help could help, but they wouldn't get paid. Let's see. Commissioner, do you want to go to the next item, which is the reinvestment tax credit? I'm sorry, did I miss you, Representative Ellers? I apologize.
You did, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. And I want to recognize and welcome Representative Hilstrom to the group that was very leery of the bailout money and the credits, or where that money was going in the first place. There were many of us on a bipartisan basis were bipartisanly critical of the money going out, but I think to compare a check, fake money, printed money, deficit money being handed to a company to a corporate rate cut, I think is, I don't think they're comparable. And if we're going to get into the business, if we cut your taxes, you must do this, this, and this, we're going to make Minnesota even more, the climate even more uncomfortable or uncompetitive than it is right now. But Madam Chair and Commissioner, you and I have introduced a small bill that's along the same lines last year, and a different one this year with the, eliminating or giving a holiday to the rate as a whole. The thing that it always confuses me, and it's writing these revenue notes, that if we cut it here, it has to mean a subtraction over there. This, you know, kind of a vacuum argument that if we don't collect it, we're going to lose it. The capital or the funds or revenues that are coming in these taxes, if the rate isn't there, the part of it I don't think we've discussed yet is the money's not just going to sit. It's going to be invested. It's going to be spent either in wages and equipment, whatnot. How do you account for that in a revenue note, not giving away your workshop secret?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Zeller, there really isn't any secret, trade secrets or anything. We do a static revenue analysis. We do not do a dynamic revenue analysis. That's been the protocol for a long time with the Department of Revenue. I mean, we've made the argument in committee that that revenue estimate doesn't accurately reflect the ultimate cost, because we expect there will be investment in Minnesota if we do X or Y. I think we made it maybe most persuasively with the apportionment change to single sales. In fact, I think an outside group even had a study commissioned by the University of Chicago, which gave an indication of what kind of job creation would come about if you went to single sales apportionment. But the short answer is we do a static revenue analysis. And sometimes you can make the case, I think sometimes you can explicitly make the case that there will be a benefit, but it's not reflected in the revenue analysis.
Representative Sauer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And that's, you know, the tax holiday that we're offering is just that. I mean, we're not going to see new jobs. We're not predicting any new jobs. There's declining revenues. It's that you bring a job in, it's not as if that corporate rate, if it's not paid, doesn't mean that the employees, the owners of the company aren't going to have sales tax, aren't going to pay for a new home, buy a car, whatever it may be. But the one, and maybe you're going to get to this, the one that we touched on, President Demmer touched on, are the LLCs, the LLPs, the S-Corps. You know, the corporate rate doesn't apply to them. And, mm-hmm. you know, we had this discussion a couple of years ago, and we were going to raise taxes on those folks. You know, we maybe have a higher or a disproportionate number of those folks because of our corporate rate being so high. And I know the governor, some of the proposals here is going to address some of that with credits and rebates. But, you know, for those folks, how are we going to not only help them, move them over to a, you know, traditional C-Corp, because right now with this high rate, it's a deterrent, because if I can make a little bit more money by staying in S Corp, I will. You know, how are we going to address that, and how are we going to address expanding those folks? Because you know, the big boys, yeah, they move around, but they're going to be here. I want to stimulate more of those small business, the 5, 10, 15 employee job providers.
Yes, sir. Madam Chair, Representative Zeller, it is a great question. And in an ideal world, if we didn't have the fiscal constraints that we currently have, I think you would have seen a governance package that had components that would address the pass-through entities. We did a bunch of different variations of it. At the end of the day, we just couldn't make it work within the constraints of the budget. We put some other things, other components that Representative Demmer alluded to try to address them. Now, the 139 expensing primarily benefits smaller businesses that are more likely to be pass-through entities. We have a refundable reinvestment credit, small window of opportunity for them to invest and get a 25% refundable tax credit. But the primary beneficiaries of that component will be smaller businesses, but they have to be smaller businesses. And even those who don't have any positive net income are going to benefit from that, because refundable tax credit. And it's a way to infuse and provide another additional incentive to invest upfront exemption on capital equipment. I mean, to the chair's point, I mean, exempting sales tax inputs would be a good thing. But I think first things first, we got to make the exemptions we currently have in law upfront. And so the governor has proposed doing an upfront exemption for capital equipment. The people we hear most complain about that are the small businesses. You know, large 3Ms, they have a bunch of people that can process those refund claims and everything. It's not a big deal. It's the small manufacturers that you allude to that is going to be most benefited by having that 6.5% when they buy a piece of machinery in their pocket immediately, not having to wait anywhere from 30 to 90 days for the department to write them a check. So we've got some other components. It's not ideal, but we're not in ideal economic times right now, so we couldn't do everything that we wanted to and really improve the business climate. We picked and chose, did the best we could within those budget constraints.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the overall point of this discussion, Madam Chair, I do agree, and I thank you for allowing us a lot of latitude on both sides of the aisle, on both sides of the issue. But from a number of these folks that I've talked to about what their decision is, everyone assumes, and lately in the news we've been hearing about how it's the evil corporations that just want to have the lavish trips and the spa treatments. And I think for a far number of, probably the vast majority of our Minnesota job providers, what I've heard from them, and one in particular, she said to me, it's not about, you know, what I get in my retirement account, it's not about if I take a trip this year. She said, we maybe have to move so that our employees can keep their jobs. That's what I'm most interested in, is keeping our employees in their jobs. It's not about my profit, it's not about my family. Yeah, they're going to make a profit to pay the, you know, to keep the doors open, and yeah, you're not in business just to break even. But a lot of these moves aren't made just on, well, I can get a better tax rate over there. It's also so they can keep their employees employed. And I think that's probably the one thing that we hear the least amount of when we have these discussions. It's all about evil business or government, big government taking more money. And I think we need to make the distinction that a lot of these cases, especially in our Minnesota companies, it's about the people working for them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hellstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I thought the money was all going to be invested and there was going to be accountability and we were going to grow jobs and get people back to work, I would vote for it to go down to zero. But when there isn't accountability in the measures, but you do have in some of these. So there are ways to do it. The upfront capital equipment exemption, I've carried that years from my local Chamber of Commerce. That is something that you can see a direct benefit. Minnesota is going to get the benefit of the investment in the community. I just don't think that in these times we can just say, business, we're going to cut your rate and we're going to trust that you're going to do the right thing. Because while many of them may, a lot of them aren't. And we want, I think, that we want to have a tax system in Minnesota that actually benefits and helps the startups and the early stage companies. They rarely have tax liabilities, so they're not going to have a tremendous benefit from this corporate income tax reduction. And so as we're doing the analysis, I hope we're looking at who is it that we're targeting, what is the benefit that we're going to get from them, and then how can we get the best group to benefit. If we can't afford to benefit everyone, who is it that will get the best long-term benefit from in Minnesota?
Thank you. Representative Diedrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have just a quick question. If we were to implement this 51% reduction in corporate franchise taxes, where would we be then in the nation?
We would be, if I have that information, I think we'd be in, of those states that have what we call a traditional corporate franchise tax, I think there's 44 that have a traditional corporate franchise tax, I believe we'd be in the bottom 5 or 6, they're cutting in half. We really substantial. Now, internationally, we'd still, with a couple with the federal rate, we'd still rank relatively high internationally, our statutory rate, but our corporate rate would be, the state rate would move us down the pecking order as far as relative to other states. And, you know, one quick follow-up maybe to Representative Hillstrom's question, too. You're right. We do have some accountability. I guess you could say accountability measures in some of these provisions. We have an angel investment credit where there's accountability measurements, small business investment act proposed here. There is. I do think it's different when you're talking about just reducing a general tax like we are. But I also would say, you know, harking back to my experience at Deed again, I spent a lot of time on the road traveling to small manufacturers in Minnesota, and most of these small manufacturers were not C-Corp. So they wouldn't necessarily benefit from this tax reduction. However, when I ask one question, I always ask them when I was meeting with them, what's your customer portfolio look like? And almost without fail, one of their primary customers was a large Minnesota-based corporation, was a Medtronic, or it was 3M, or it was, they made a little widget, and they said, this is 60% of our revenues are attributable to our Polaris, or an Arctic Cat, or, you know, one manufacturer made a little plastic box that the defibrillator goes in. And he said, if we lost the Medtronic account, that's 70% of our revenue. So you see the ancillary benefits by having a strong corporate presence in Minnesota. You see that many of these small manufacturers are employing 50 to 100 people. They are heavily reliant on those Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 companies. And they flat out said, if I lose my Polaris customer, half my workforce can be laid off. So I think it's helpful to have a robust corporate presence in Minnesota. We've been blessed to have a disproportionate number of Fortune 500 companies. I mean, you can just go down the list. United Health Group, General Mills, Medtronic, you know, St. Jude, 3M, Arctic Cat, Polaris, Hormel, I mean, U.S. Bank. I mean, we are fortunate, and there's ancillary benefits to that. And a lot of it flows down to these smaller businesses who are vendors and customers. And I don't think we can forget that. Those are really important employers in Minnesota. And there's benefits from you.
Representative Beatrice Server?
No, thank you.
Okay. Other questions? You know, the debate will rage on. We are not going to get through all your other stuff in 8 minutes.
Sure we can.
So I think, wait till we get into Green V and everything else. So I think we're going to just, if everyone can save this stuff, we're going to adjourn. I do want to say that Monday, we think, we're going to do House File 95 on the floor. So my guess is taxes may get skipped unless, for some reason, it's a 10-minute bill, which I don't think so. So, if we run late on the floor on Monday, we'll probably cancel taxes. So just keep that in mind. And thank you, Commissioner, for being with us.
Thank
we
you,
are adjourned.
Sir.